All right, we're going to continue our conversation, and we're going to continue to talk about Afghanistan now on the Ideas Network. Lawrence Korb is joining us this half hour of the program, Senior Fellow at American Progress and a Senior Advisor to the Center for Defense Information. He was Assistant Secretary of Defense, where he administered about 70% of the defense budget in the Ronald Reagan administration. He was awarded the Department of Defense Medal for Distinguished Public Service. He served on active duty for 4 years as a naval flight officer and retired from the Naval Reserve with the rank of captain. He also served as director of the Center for Public Policy Education and senior fellow in the Foreign Policy Studies Program at the Brookings Institution. He is joining us now to talk specifically about Afghanistan. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. An email address, feel free to use that whenever you'd like, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Lawrence Korb, thank you so much for being with us.
It's nice to be with you.
As the president mulls over various strategies for where do we go now in Afghanistan, what do you say?
Well, I say the first thing you got to make sure is that the Karzai government gets its act together, because even if you can get the security situation under control, at some point you're going to have to leave. And if you don't have a legitimate government that is seen as legitimate and does things like dispense justice equally to the Afghan people, then a group like the Taliban will come back.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that this government is capable of doing that, of getting its act together?
Well, I think there is a chance that it can, because I think what happened was President Bush basically would establish these personal relationships with people like Karzai, Maliki, and Musharraf, and overlook, you know, their faults. Obama does not have that relationship. And more important, he has basically, you know, said, if you don't clean up your act, you're not going to get more troops. So I think there is an incentive for Karzai. And I think the fact that, you know, the United Nations called him to account after his, first election, all the things that he did, I think will, you know, get his attention.
But he's been in power so long. Hasn't he had enough time to get things turned around?
Well, he started off actually very well. And the problem was that because we diverted our attention from from Afghanistan to go to Iraq, and the situation began to deteriorate, I think he started hedging his bets. But, you know, Obama's already doubled the number of troops that he has sent there, and basically has called this, you know, the right war. So I think that will give him the incentive to do what he needs to do.
Mm-hmm. There also, as you well know, are many comparisons being made to Vietnam right now, and that the current administration may find itself in the same kind of quagmire. What do you think?
Well, I think the similarity to Vietnam is the corrupt government. Mm. Because if you go back and you look at Vietnam, when we finally figured out, you know, what to do when General Abrams took over for General Westmoreland, we began to do very well. The problem is, when we left, the military that we set up refused to, you know, fight for the government of South Vietnam.
The number of troops, is there a set number, do you think, that would be able to secure the country in a better fashion, or do you not have a recommendation in that regard?
Well, I think that General McChrystal, who I had the privilege of, he worked for me for a year when I was at the Council on Foreign Relations, he feels that 44,000 more American troops, which would bring our number, you know, to about 110,000, is enough to provide security in the major population area. So I have to feel that, you know, he's got a pretty good handle on that.
Mm-hmm. What about the other work that's being done by the forces in terms of helping to build schools, helping to put education in very, very remote parts of the country? Are those efforts underway in full force, and are they just as important as troops being used to secure areas?
Well, they're just as important. The problem is that without security, it's pretty hard to do those things. And again, President Bush back in 2003, promised the Afghans, these are his words, a Marshall Plan. Well, that didn't occur, and, so the people, again, are skeptical. So we've got to get the security situation under control and then go ahead with, with these efforts. But it's very hard to do that without security.
Lawrence Korb, what would happen if we just left?
Well, I think if we just left, what you would see probably is the Taliban take over, and the human suffering would be horrible for those people who supported us. And then there's the question about whether they would allow it to have a haven for al-Qaeda. And finally, I think the real problem, and that's why nobody's talking about leaving, it's just a question of what strategy should you pursue, is what would happen in Pakistan. Because the Pakistanis simply don't trust us. I spent 10 days in Pakistan in April, and they use the term the disposable ally. You know, when you need us, you use us, like we did to get the Soviets out of Afghanistan, and then we put sanctions on them when they tested their nuclear weapon. Then we needed them again after 9/11. So I think that would really be a key if we were, just leave. I think the Pakistanis then would, make some sort of deal with the Taliban.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? How do you measure the success of the Pakistani offensive against al-Qaeda in northern Pakistan?
I think it's better than it used to be. I mean, for the longest time, they pretended to go after them when they didn't. But I think what happened is the Taliban sort of overstretched. I mean, they came into what I would call Pakistan proper. And basically, that really got the Pakistanis saying, well, wait a second, we don't mind you being in the frontier areas. In fact, we're happy what you're doing in Afghanistan because we don't want the Indians, to take over there and fill the power vacuum. But, hey, wait a second, you came into our, heartland. And so that's why they undertook this offensive.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Lawrence Korb, and we'll take the first one in just a moment. Let me remind you of the number, 800-486-8655. He is now a senior fellow at American Progress and a senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information. He served as Assistant Secretary of Defense from 1981 through 1985. Dennis from Aspen, Minnesota is our first caller. Hi, Dennis.
Yes. Hi, everybody, and thanks for the opportunity. We're really talking about problems and situations in the entire region. So this pertained, first question pertained more to your first guest, but your guest now, is Lawrence, seems to have lots of experience in the region. And my question to Madeleine Albright, Secretary of State, it really wasn't about pins and hair. It goes back a question that needs to be answered by somebody. During the first weeks of the Clinton administration, Clinton stated, with regarding Iraq, we'll continue the Bush policy. Saddam Hussein's response was, oh, that's sad. And later, a young Iraqi girl over BBC, she asked Clinton, why can't we have pencils and paper, and why are you bombing us? That question needs to get answered. The UN put out the figures that 500,000 children died under those sanctions. So I'm wondering if Madeleine Albright or others that are informed in the region could defend the statement that Madeleine made. She said, what good are bombs if we don't use them? And I'd like to get this child's question answered. And regarding the current situation with the Taliban, they were told in Texas about a month before 9/11. They didn't go along with the pipeline agreement after they were told, you're going to have a democracy if we're going to do the pipeline agreement. And they were told, well, if you don't want to go with that, then we will carpet bomb you. We really need to look deeply at ourselves and respond to some of these situations we've created.
Lawrence Korb, you want to respond?
Yeah, well, he raises a couple of good points. And I think the first one about the sanctions that we had against Saddam after the first Persian Gulf War, which was started by the first President Bush and then continued by President Clinton. What we should have had is what Colin Powell tried to do, but by the time he did it, the Bush administration was intent on regime change. Were smart sanctions. What we should have done is prevented him from getting access to military equipment or anything he could use to make weapons of mass destruction rather than, focusing on other things, which then, of course, did lead to, a lot of human tragedies there. In terms of, the Taliban, actually, our country was happy to recognize the Taliban when they took over in Afghanistan before 9/11. And in fact, before Bush went into Afghanistan, he basically told the Taliban, if you turn over al-Qaeda, you know, we'll leave you alone. That's all we want. Well, of course, they didn't, and then we went in, and of course, now we're debating about did we do it right, how long do we stay.
Thanks, Dennis, for your call. Bob from Middleton, hi.
Hello, good morning, and thank you. This is a fantastic subject we're discussing this morning. I want to ask a question to our guest speaker and also to the listeners. It seems to me that we are trying to discuss Afghanistan through the model that we view government of a strong central republic, and everything we're debating here seems to be based on that presumption that the region of Afghanistan, once they have this national government under this individual named Karzai, and we're interpreting so much of what we do through that model, and isn't it more accurate to recognize that Afghanistan is a region, that within it there's a series of nations, and that perhaps no matter what we do as a government or as a nation is never going to create a satisfactory government that's trusted by the people of a region where they say, we are Afghanistanis, and this is our flag, and this is our government. Instead, aren't we going to always see what is a very loosely knit confederation with constantly changing dynamics to the tribal structure? And I'd be interested to hear what the speaker has to say on that.
Yeah, I think Bob makes a good point, and that's one of the things that President Obama is doing in his review. He's focusing on the various provinces and basically saying, okay, you know, can we work in certain provinces where you have an effective government and bring about security there and reconstruction? The one thing to keep in mind, though, and he's right, that they've never had a really strong central government. The fact of the matter is that Karzai does appoint the provincial governors, and that's a problem because if he, you know, gets rid of the effective ones, like there's a very good one in Helmand province right now where we have a lot of forces, but he's not on the Karzai team, if you will. And if Karzai gets rid of him, then you have a big problem. So, yeah, you have to work, both ends, and I assume that, you know, President Obama and Vice President Biden have made it clear to Karzai, you know, any type of that type of thing is going to undermine, you know, the United States' willingness to continue to help them.
Anything else, Bob?
Well, I have a quick follow-up to that. Are we as a government and we as a people going to be able to adapt to a situation where perhaps we conclude that Karzai is president simply because we have another opponent who is that I'm withdrawing from this whole thing because I don't feel it's really a government. I mean, we had turned around and said Karzai is the victor in the election, but instead what we're seeing is a good segment of the Afghani voters, those representing this individual, saying we're not part of this, we don't recognize this government anymore, and doesn't that increase the threat to our own soldiers and our own policy in the future?
Yeah, it does, and that's why I think, certainly, you know, Karzai cooked the books a lot in the first election, but he still had he still was the winner. I mean, even if the election was, completely fair, he still would have had the most votes. And I think in the runoff, he still would have won. But really, we shouldn't focus too much on that because the main thing is, what does he do now? Okay, he's there for better or for worse. And hopefully it'll be better. And I think that's why this is a key issue. And I think President Obama was right to wait until after the election was settled. And we know that President Obama spoke to President Karzai yesterday to congratulate him, and I think also put him on notice. Hey, you know, you got to shape up, or we're not going to, continue to spend American lives and treasure.
Yeah. What do you think was the real motivation behind Abdullah saying, I don't want to run again, I don't want the runoff?
Well, I think he would have lost. I mean, we had never heard much about him before, and, he's not wildly popular or anything like that in Afghanistan. So he knew he was going to lose, so by saying no runoff, this, in a certain sense, I think preserves his leverage, because we both know for sure that, you know, what would have happened. And I think this is hopefully now that, you know, since he didn't force a runoff, Karzai may be willing to reach out to him and, you know, his supporters and make them part of a unity government.
More phone calls in a moment. Our guest this half hour is Lawrence Korb, senior fellow at American Progress, assistant secretary of defense from 81 through 85. This is the our number, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls. Mohammed from Milwaukee. Hello, Mohammed.
Hi. Thank you for letting me call you. I am a doctor in Milwaukee who immigrated 40 years ago and usually goes back and forth. And my hometown is 14 kilometers from the Afghan border in the heart of the Pashtun Taliban area. And why don't our generals do not understand the dictum that the history repeats itself? Ranjit Singh did not dare to cross the mountains. The British lost an army in Jalalabad with one man reporting that everybody is killed. The Soviets got humiliated. These people, they are my people, they are corrupt, they are terrible, they are warriors. One man can sit behind a rock and stop a platoon or a battalion. Why don't our generals understand that? And please don't let our kids die and support a corrupt everybody. There are about five major ethnic groups in Afghanistan, and they are all corrupt. Uzbeks, Tajiks, Pashtuns, there are about two languages and three languages, Balochi and Pashto and the Dari. How can we put this in patchwork of insanity together? Please get out. Please get out.
So, Mohammed, are you saying it's hopeless? Everything is hopeless?
It is. Nobody has ever won there. It's the topography is such that even the Pakistani government or the British government had the excluded areas of the Fatah area, and they never really cared to govern it because they couldn't govern it. What they did was they would just bribe the chief and the whole chief's tribal vote whichever they want. What voting? These people are in the Stone Age.
Lawrence Korb.
Well, I think Mohammed makes a very, very good point that, you know, we should be very careful before we get involved in these things. Let me say a couple of things. When we went into Afghanistan back in 2001, the Afghanistan people greeted us overwhelmingly. They also don't like the Taliban. And I think, unlike the Soviets and the British, we don't want to run the place. We want to set up a stable government that's not a threat, that treats its people reasonably well, is not, doesn't destabilize the region, and we want to get out. And I think the fact that we have agreed, for example, with the Iraqis to get out, sort of undermines the narrative that a lot of people in that part of the world have. The other thing is, what's one of the reasons why we picked Karzai, we were happy Karzai got selected by what they call the loyal Jirga or the tribal elders, because he is a Pashtun, and hopefully, as Mohammed pointed out, they're on the border with Pakistan, and all of the it's been very hard to govern them. We were hoping that he might solve that. Interestingly enough, he started off very well. No doubt about it. And the problem is that, he has become, corrupt as he's gone along. And I think one of the reasons was he wasn't sure if we were going to stay the course.
Thanks, Mohammed, so much for your call. So what do we expect him to do? What do we need for him to do? How does he turn things around?
Well, I think basically, stop, like with his family, paying off the drug dealers.
Right.
And get people in there who want to dispense, justice. One of the reasons that people go to the Taliban, even though this is ruthless, in fact, they do dispense justice. I mean, in Pakistan, you can wait 8 years for a trial, and the Taliban come in, they can settle it, right away. And one of the reasons the Taliban were able to succeed in Afghanistan in the 90s after, we left was that they did restore law and order. And interesting enough, their first time through, they stopped the drug trade. Now, of course, they're, profiting, from it. So I think you need to keep those things in mind. And I think Mohammed's right. We got to make it clear. Look, we don't want to run the place, okay? We just want to give you the opportunity to run it and not be a threat, to the region. And remember, we're not the only ones in Afghanistan. I think somehow this gets lost because we're having this big debate. Right now, there are, you know, over 30,000 troops from other nations. And while they all don't have the same, you know, fighting ability as us and the ability to, you know, conduct military operations, they are there. And it's not just us this time, it's NATO. This is NATO's first out-of-area operation, actually, first meaningful, you know, operation. And so, you know, that's also involved if this thing turns, you know, horribly.
Yeah. Well, it's asking a lot of this guy, isn't it? I mean, there's a heck of a lot of corruption.
Well, there is. And again, if Karzai can go back to where he was, if you will, in, you know, 2003 and 2004, he was pretty popular. People forget that, you know, he was selected by the loyal jerker. He got elected overwhelmingly in 2005. It was a very high turnout, and you didn't have any of the tales of corruption that you have now in his second term, if you will. And I think one of the reasons is he was, you know, the Taliban started to make gains because we took our eye off the ball there. And I think that got him to say, okay, I better make some deals here, you know, because, again, you know, look at the history of the United States and, you know, we can talk about Vietnam, Lebanon, Somalia, that, you know, I better, you know, make sure that I survive.
Right. The idea that no foreign country has been able to be at all successful in Afghanistan, the British, the Soviets, now the United States. Can you comment more on that? What makes it so difficult? And if Mohammed really has a very deep point here that nobody ever will be?
Well, I think what the lesson is that an outside power can't run it and can't control it. Now, if you go back, I mean, each of the experiences is somewhat different. I mean, the British were the colonized. Remember, they controlled India, and Pakistan was part of that. So they were seen as, you know, they're going to come in and change our culture and everything. The Soviets, you know, basically one of the reasons the Soviets lost is because we were helping the Mujahideen and the rebels. You know, probably have seen Charlie Wilson's War. You know, I mean,
right.
this was true. I was in government at the time, and you know, basically, once we gave them Stinger missiles to shoot down the Soviet helicopters, it was all over for the for the Soviets. So I think you have to, you know, put that in context. And again, we're not there alone. You've got 35,000 troops from, you know, other nations. The UN has authorized this mission. NATO has authorized. So it's a lot different than, you know, British or colonialism and Soviets trying to expand their empire.
What about the military mission missing the mark sometimes and killing civilians? I've heard that this is a very large problem, and every time that happens and a mistake is made, you have an enormous increase in the number of people who join al-Qaeda. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Well, see, again, this is what happened because you didn't have enough troops in there, so our troops that were there had to rely on air power to deal with the Taliban, and air power is very indiscriminate. The Taliban quickly recognized that, so they'd attack Americans and then run into somebody's house that might have, you know, women and children. We bomb it, and of course, we kill the women and children, and that's right. So I think one of the things that General McChrystal has done, and McKiernan and his predecessors said, hey, we're going to have to stop relying on air power. The interesting thing is I get a lot of letters and, you know, people saying, well, what about our men and women over there? You're leaving them defenseless. So it's really a fine line, and I think what General McChrystal has said, you better be darn sure that, you know, they haven't, you know, gone into a place where there's going to be a lot of civilians.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the president, when will he announce what a change strategy may be? Do you have any indication of that?
I think it'll be when he comes back from Asia. I mean, he can't announce it and then go off to Asia for a couple of weeks. So I think that'll be, you know, when he comes back at the end of this month. That would be my guess.
Mm-hmm. And what about Pakistan? Let's spend just a few minutes here before we run out of time. You can't really talk about Afghanistan without talking about Pakistan.
Well, that's correct. And of course, I mean, with Pakistan, you would really be wrong if you put American troops in there. And I think we need to demonstrate to the Pakistanis we're not leaving. We just passed, I think, a very good bill, the Kerry-Lugar, you know, Berman bill, which says to them, hey, you're going to give you $7.5 billion in economic aid, pretty much with no strings attached for the next 5 years to you to improve your economy. And the military assistance we give you, you got to use to fight the Taliban, because under Bush, we gave them like $11 billion, and they bought F-16s, you know, to deal with the Indians. I mean, the interesting thing, we're concerned about the Taliban and al-Qaeda. The majority of the people in Pakistan are worried about India.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, we have to, you know, tread that very carefully, and I think we've got to get involved in trying to help India and Pakistan resolve the Kashmir crisis, which to them is sort of like, you know, the Middle East crisis is to a lot of people in the Arab world.
When you think about all that needs to be accomplished, Lawrence, I wonder if the American people will have the patience for this. We've already been there for a long period of time. I can't imagine things are going to turn around very rapidly.
They're not. And I think if President Obama decides to send more troops there, he's got to make a speech to the American people and explain what the stakes are and explain that it's not going to be over quick and easy. And that it's worth it. And he really needs to make that case. Plus, if he doesn't, I think you're right. The American people are just tired of war. And while we can get into these nuances that your callers, you know, I think quite correctly have pointed out, American people look and say, well, wait a second here. You know, I'm reading in the paper, 14 Americans die today. You know, what's going on? You know, why we're broke. Why are we spending money, you know, to fix up that place?
Yes. So how does he explain to people that it's worth it? Why is it worth it?
Well, I think he's got to point out that if things don't turn out well there, that you can destabilize the region. This is where Al-Qaeda Central is. This obviously is where the attacks of September 11th came. Pakistan has nuclear weapons. If we get out of Afghanistan, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda get nuclear weapons, that, you know, will make 9/11 look sort of tame by comparison. I think that's the case he's got to make.
Yeah. Thank you, Lawrence, so much for being with us. We really appreciate your expertise and time.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Lawrence Korb, our guest this half hour, senior fellow at American Progress and a senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information. He was director of the Center for Public Policy Education and served as Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration from 1981 through 1985, administering about 70% of the defense budget. We also thank former U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright for being with us the first half hour. We had a busy hour here, the first half hour of this hour, to talk about her new beautiful and interesting book, Read My Pins, Stories from a Diplomat's Jewel Box. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks to John Treader for on-air production in our studios here in Milwaukee. And thank you, everybody, for your calls. Wouldn't it be neat to have Madeleine Albright? All of you haven't seen the book. It is a beautiful book. To bring those pins to the Art Museum here in Milwaukee would be really nice. Nice place for it. Okay, that's it for this hour, but we'll return here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.